This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 651, brought to you by Harry's. To get your trial shave set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 651. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
How are you doing since last time, Josh? Are you recovered?
I really, like at the end, I was like, I just need this to stop. And I don't quite remember the end, but I was, and to be fair, at the end of 650, it was whatever o'clock at night. We were an hour past where I said, I was like, I have to be done by now. And Daddy was a little cranky the next day. That's what I can tell you for sure.
Sorry, kids.
Yeah, definitely. We are iFanboy, and every week we say a little too much. We read our stack of comics also, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book. We'll talk about other books from the week. Sometimes I guess we're reading too much. The patron pick, and maybe if we have time, some listener mail. It'll be a grand old time. Your spoiler warning is that there are spoilers. It's a review show. That's how this works. You know, I know, we all know. Connor, you had the pick of the week.
I did, and I don't really like caveats. I don't like conditions on the pick. I tried to avoid them whenever possible.
Understood.
The problem is, so this week I had 23 books. It was a big week after the last couple of weeks, which were relatively light. And I finished, and nothing had blown my socks off. You know that feeling, Josh, where you're like, oh, I don't know what the pick is.
Yes.
And it's not the problem that there's too many books to choose from, which is a different problem, but an easier problem. This was the,
It's just that nothing sticks out. Nothing is like the obvious choice.
And there were lots of good things.
Yes,
I read
good things.
Lots of things that were like, this was good, but nothing where I was like, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. So what I started thinking about the ones I liked and which ones I thought were the most interesting or which ones I wanted to read the next issue of the most. And I hit back on Archie 1941 number one, which is a new miniseries. It's just, I think it's a 6-issue miniseries from Brian Augustin and Mark Waid. They're an old writing team. They've written together for decades.
What's funny is that we refer back to Mark Waid's Flash, but that's actually not correct.
Brian Augustin and Mark Waid's Flash.
Exactly.
At least in the beginning, then it became Mark Waid's Flash. And Peter Krause on art, who was Mark Waid's artist on Irredeemable. And what this miniseries is doing is basically taking Archie back to its roots. And it's an Archie story set in 1941, as the title says. So Archie was created in 1939. So this is basically right around the time when Archie was originally created.
It's when he would have been graduating.
Right, and that's exactly what the story is.
Right.
It is the graduation of Archie and the gang from high school in 1941, and as you might imagine, things are a little complicated in 1941, and so there's the drumbeat of war happening all around them, and Archie is feeling a malaise. Did you read this?
I did.
Okay. I was going to tell you to read it, but then I know you had a lot of books. I didn't want to put it on you, but Archie's feeling a malaise, as a lot of young men at the time felt. You know, they something that's probably completely foreign to a lot of people now is the call to serve, the call to help. And while that's not explicitly stated here yet, it's pretty much what I feel like is the undertone of this particular issue is that, you know, while everyone's having fun partying on the beach after the graduation, he's sort of haunted by the newsreels that he saw before the film and the news in the paper and on the radio, and he's not quite sure what he wants to do with his life. His dad wants him to go to college or get a job, and he's not sure.
It's interesting. First of all, I had seen this, and it piqued my interest a little bit. Probably not quite enough to go grab it, just because it's sort of out of
my... They first emailed us about it like 6 months ago.
Yeah, but...
To tell us this was coming.
From the sort of cover image to the just the title, really, I thought, oh, that could be interesting. And then you made a pick, so I quickly, you know, made an effort to read it. And I think it's really interesting. I thought it was pretty well done. It's certainly kind of Archie in structure only.
Yes.
If that makes sense. And they're exploring something that I think you're right is pretty foreign if it's not something you're familiar with. If you happen to be the kind of person who reads about this time period a lot, it's very familiar. And it's interesting because basically it's the summer of 1941, which would mean that it's before Pearl Harbor, for those of you and so it's the one thing I got was I don't really know how people felt at that point. Like, I know that there was we weren't in the war, you know, I know that there were things going on, but I'm not sure, like, in the populace where people felt like they
weren't in the war, and there was a large contingent of people that didn't want anything to do with it.
That had everything to do with how bad World War I went, even though we were only in that for just a little while. And there is a really nice bit, I think is probably my favorite moment in the whole thing. Who's the guy who runs the soda fountain?
Pop.
And he, you know, gives them the shakes, and he's really nice, and then he kind of whispers to himself, and he's like, not these kids, please.
Yeah, that was great.
And I was like, oh, he fought in the war. And I thought
he knew kids that went off to the war, because war would have been what, like... 20 years earlier, Pop's probably in his 50s. He could have been in the war, for sure.
I mean, could have gone either way, though. He would have been affected by it.
For sure.
And I liked that that moment because it didn't shove anything down my throat. They didn't explain it to me.
You had to know what he was talking about.
And you know, really, like, there's a little narcissism there, and that, like, that makes me feel good. Like, I know this thing. I just like that approach to things. And so if you don't get it, then you don't get it. It doesn't matter. I think there were – Peter Krause did – Krause, not Krause. Krause is Narm.
The actor.
Krause, who worked with Mark Waid previously on Invincible.
Irredeemable.
Did the breakdowns for this, but not the finishes. There were bits, and I'm not sure if it was in the layouts or it had to do with the script, but there were little bits of sort of fuzziness between moments. And I think that they were trying to indicate that, like, Archie was sort of lost in thought. But it felt a little like they skipped time, and I'm not sure if that was on purpose.
Wait
or not.
A minute. There's no credit for an inker or a finisher on here. It's just a letter of line art.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
So who did the finishes?
I don't know. The colorist? Maybe it was done, like, digitally.
Interesting.
Along with the color. I did notice that. There's a bit like, so Betty gives him like a frame at one point, and they have like a kind of a conversation. It feels like we got like bits of conversation, or we popped into conversations like after they started.
Yeah,
a couple times.
I think one of the things that Mark Wood was doing on the Archie book, well, I had stopped reading it a while back, but one of the things he had jumped around like that a lot.
Yeah,
where you sort of got like a breakneck pace. This is a little bit slower. I think what we're doing here is, We're mainly focused on Archie as we see him in different aspects of his life. So we see him at the school getting his diploma. We see him with the gang at the movies. Then we see him with his parents. We see him with Pop. We see him with Reggie. And then we see with Betty. So we're sort of seeing how whatever he's feeling, and they haven't spelled it out yet, so we're just speculating, but whatever he's feeling is affecting all the aspects of Archie's life. So we're just sort of getting sort of vignettes of those things, because it culminates with him at the movies again, seeing a twin feature plus News on the March and shorts.
Yeah.
And reacting to the Nazi threat that's looming and the Atlantic Charter and all that stuff. So it's sort of just like, here's since graduation, here's the way that the world is affecting Archie's world. And it's not in a positive way. He throws Betty's. I thought him dropping Betty's framed photo of them on the ground was a little bit harsh and out of character, but
yeah. But that he's out of character. I guess that's the point.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really cruel thing to do.
Yes, it was.
Archie's not cruel. He might be an adult and a dumbbell, but he's not cruel.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe 1941 Archie is a little bit cruel.
Yeah, it was interesting. I enjoyed it. I liked the tone. I think the art served it really well. It says line art, so maybe that's just a different way of saying he did ink.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't do layouts. Maybe he just did the pencils and the inks based on layouts from the creative team. I don't know.
Credits are weird. But yeah, weird. I mean, this is right up our alley.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of War Horner.
And I like seeing these characters in their original era. I mean, this was the era they were designed for. This was the era they were built for. You know, Archie does have a throwback quality to it, and this is to see them in the 40s. This makes sense. It's kind of like when I like seeing, you know, Superman stories set in the 30s. It kind of makes sense in a way because that was the initial DNA of the thing. And so this was fun. I liked it, and then there's a lot of great variant covers. They have a real great stable of artists that do covers for them, and I'm very curious to see what happens, because this is a miniseries, and it's quote unquote out of continuity. So basically anything could happen. They're not gonna kill Archie in the war, but you know, anything could happen. They killed Jughead in Afterlife with Archie, so that's kind of fun, is that I don't know what this story's gonna be. It literally could be anything, and that's what made me most excited to read the next issue. And
do we know how many issues?
I think it's six.
Okay.
But I'm not, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it's six.
Remind me when the next one comes out.
I will do that.
Because I will, it's five.
I know.
It's five.
It's five issues? Okay, well, that's fine. Either way. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's not ongoing. And so I liked it. Archie, 1941, number one. If you are into Archie, if you like the history of World War II, if you, like, you know, it was an interesting and nice take on these original characters in the original time period in an interesting way, because I don't, you know, if you were a teenager like Archie in the 40s, you probably went to war, and he didn't do that in the old comics, so it's interesting.
He definitely, they all would have been drafted.
Yeah, for sure. Well, not Jughead, he probably has high cholesterol, but
he's 4F.
There's actually a lot of stealth war comics this week.
As we talk
about Journey into Mystery, The Birth of Krakoa, number one. I guess this is a one-shot from Dennis Hopeless, Jabril Morissette fan, Rachel Rosenberg, Travis Lanham. And this was a surprise. A great Greg Smallwood cover. Great cover.
Mm-hmm.
An original Nick Fury and the Howling Commando story, which I was not expecting.
I said to myself, what is this? Journey into Mystery? What is this? Oh, Dennis Hopeless wrote it. And as soon as I saw his name on the cover, I went for it. There was no moment to not do that. And I don't know why this exists.
I don't know either.
I can't tell any way that this would have a reason to be, especially under the Journey into Mystery thing, although except that they are they're rebirthing some of the other you know, like Marvel 2-in-1 and what's the other one that
Journey into 2-in-1s. I don't know.
Yeah, but like some of those old anthology titles that we've seen stuff using those over the past year or so. So, you know,
copyright thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'll take it though. Yeah, Howling Commando's psychological body horror on the living island, and Nick Fury ends up communing with the island, basically, as we see sort of the birth of this sort of. I'm going to guess it's Kirby. The Living Island really feels like Kirby.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but from the era, we sort of...
It has a great tagline. What is the tagline? It's the island that walks? Or what is it?
Something like that.
The island that walks like a man.
Yep.
That is a great old Marvel tagline.
You know, and just the way it's drawn, it's like hills and they kind of have eyes. It's like a Super Swamp Thing kind of deal. But then, like, the creepy thing that happens to the plants.
Oh, Krakoa was Len Wein and Dave Cockrum.
Nice. Yeah, that seems, yeah. That the one dude, how he gets covered in plants all around.
Yeah,
him.
I think, I mean, ugh. I really like this. What kept me from it, picking it was that it felt like it needed 10 more pages.
It needed a beat that wasn't
it
there.
Needed something. It was missing something. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure what it was.
Over.
The bomb drug gets dropped on the island. I guess this is where they were testing the bomb during the war, World War II. And it causes a mutation, causes Krakoa. And so the Howling Commandos, who were led by Nick Fury, who was piloting the plane, they crash on the same island. Did you say why they crashed?
There was the storm because of the bomb, maybe? Like they were flying along fine, and then the plane.
They went down.
Damn thing did a number on Sergeant Fury's old airplane.
I guess no one told them not to fly around the test site. Yeah. And the bomb brought them down, and they crashed on the island. Nick goes down with the plane. The rest of the Howling Commandos jump out. Nick ends up communing with the island, as Josh said. And then the rest of the guys get infected with the island, so they start growing like moss on their bodies. Ugh. Or whatever that is, the green stuff is. And then it just sort of gets resolved. I thought they just needed a little bit more. Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Just give me the why. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really have a sense of a why. Like you said, I don't know why they made this. Like, it was fun, but like story-wise, I didn't really get a why. Other than it was just the origin of Krakoa. But I liked it a lot. And I thought the art was terrific. The Jabril and Morissette fan art is really good. And I'm happy to read more of these. Marvel wants to make them just for me and you.
Yep, absolutely. I'll take any Dennis Hopeless I can get.
And more classic Fury and his Howling Commandos. I mean,
yeah,
I had almost forgotten he was around. On the move.
Whatever.
I find Fantastic Four fascinating. I think you talked about this with Viscardi.
Uh-huh.
When I was off the first issue. And so this is the second issue, Dan Slott, Sarah Pacelli. And I think it's so interesting, beyond the fact that they still haven't finished that other miniseries, which we've talked about.
Sure.
But that, first of all, this is the first time the team comes back together. Like, Johnny and Ben are reunited with Reed and Sue and the kids. Mm-hmm. And it's so underplayed. In fact, it doesn't really happen. They just sort of are back together along with...
Which means that the end of that other series isn't going to mean anything.
But it's just strange, like...
It's weird.
They come back and they go, hey, how did we get here? And then the next shot is a big hero shot of them, plus basically everyone who's ever been a Fantastic Four member or unofficially been a Fantastic Four member as they could fight these dudes in another dimension. And it just felt like a very odd thing after all this time to really underplay the reunion. Especially when you had a whole miniseries about the fact that they are trying to reunite and they miss each other.
I don't think.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't think Dan Slott's even, like, it feels like he's not even acknowledging that. I'm not going to say not aware of it, but like he's just not paying attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it seems that seems clear. It just seems to me, even if that didn't exist, that this would be so undersold. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that from market standpoint. I just mean from like story. You want that cathartic release of, you know, Johnny and his sister and Ben and his best friend, and they're all back together. And it's just, we skipped that panel.
Well, apparently. I think what was weird is that, like, I felt like I missed an issue. I was like, did I miss an issue of this? And it was only number two. And I was like, no. So we were just sort of in it and going. Which is not a bad thing. I just didn't expect it.
It's not a way to start the series. It's just Reed and Sue and the Fantastic Foundation have been dimension hopping through dimensions that Franklin creates because he has the power to create dimensions. And they have sort of – which seems like cheating. Like he creates the dimension, then they go catalog it. And that seems odd. But not, less like exploring and more like
– I agree. I had that same
diorama
thought.
I made. And now anyway, that's what they're doing. And they run into some baddies and call in help to fight the baddies, the help being Johnny and Ben Grimm, and then, as I said, the Spider-Man and Medusa and Wolverine, who I thought was dead, and Luke Cage and Black Panther and Ghost Rider and a ton of people. Mm-hmm. Herbie the Robot, Storm, so Medusa. So it just was an odd, it's an odd construction. That's all.
Here's what I can tell you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you just said. 100%. Mm-hmm. I was reading through this, and I was on, there's a page where Reed and Sue have some coffee sitting on mm-hmm. the side of the hill. And I was looking at it, and I go, who's drawing this? This is gorgeous. In fact, yeah, like I was sitting next to my wife, and I go, and I said it out loud. She doesn't care or know or have a context for any of it or whatever, but like I don't do that. And I just go, this is gorgeous. And I sort of flip back to the thing. I was like, all right, Sarah Pichelli. And it doesn't look like the Sarah Pichelli art that we had seen in Spider-Man. Not a bad, it's not instantly recognizable in that way. It's got a slightly different texture to it, I guess.
Yes, it does. It does.
But it's really wonderful, like stunning kind of stuff. It's, you know what it reminded me of? It was Immonen-y.
That's interesting.
It's kind of Immonen-y in the layouts and the acting. Yeah, I see an Immonen-y.
See an Immonen-y. Stuart is Immonen-y.
Yeah, like there's a.
What if his middle initial was C and he was Stuart Immonen-y?
It's almost got more of like a European flow to it, oddly enough.
I was going to say that also. I like that Reed is kind of looks like a 1940s dork. Like he has like the taxi ears, you know, like you get the ears that pop out, and he's got the sort of he's sort of skinny, and even though he should be a bit more mannish, I like that look on him. And also, he has a very weird uncool beard, which is kind of fun too.
Yeah.
I mean, the art, it looks great. It looks really good. Yeah, I've got no complaints about the art. I mean, I like it so far. I just don't get why they're doing it this way.
Yeah. What's interesting is, like, that kind of makes it interesting.
Yes, that's what I
mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it kind of, like, I don't know that it's good, but it makes me interested. It makes me want to keep, like, we've said interesting a lot, but, like, it makes, it has engaged me to answer the question, like, are you doing this on purpose, or are you just and I don't know, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's just it's weird. The much valued return of the Fantastic Four, who've been gone for a long time for business reasons.
Been gone and, a long time. Maybe you ain't heard.
Been gone a long time. You ain't heard. I don't do no shines. Just strange. Let's move on to Hey Kids Comics number 2, which you also talked about with Viscardi the first time. And this sounds like a similar refrain, but I like it, but I don't know what the point is.
Oh, I do. I feel like I was really excited about the first one. I made a pick of the week. I was super excited to talk about it, and I was kind of bummed that you weren't here. I saw that it's funny because I had like a stack of Image books after I finished all the Marvel and DC stuff and the Dark Horse, and I was like, all right, go to the next thing. And I saw that it was in there, and I was like. And I got halfway excited and halfway like, oh, this is too dense for the time that I have to read this. And I'm worried. but I think that the theme sort of became clear to me as I was going through this, in that there's two worlds of comics that we're selling. And Howard Chaykin, like as an image of a community, and Howard Chaykin is familiar with both of them. He comes from two different eras. Like he wasn't part of the Golden and Silver Age necessarily, but he knew the people who were. Mm-hmm. So, like, he has a hand in that stuff. And, you know, to be fair, you know, as early as 10, 15 years ago, there were definitely still Golden Age comics professionals still, not necessarily active, but they were around and they were lucid. Sure. And they, you know, like, they were living history, basically.
We've talked to them.
Yes, exactly. And I feel like he's bridging that with where the comics industry is now. Again, I'm not sure who the hell this is for.
I get that what you're saying. I just don't know that's coming through in the story.
So
basically, we're going through four eras of comics here, and we skip through 45, and then we skip to 55, And then we skip to 65. And then we jump way ahead to 2001. And we just spin a couple of pages in each era as we follow different.
I think what he's doing is weaving all of these things. He's weaving all of these things together. And so instead of having like these guys who don't talk to these guys, you know, having them separate, he's showing it how it all goes together and how the perception of them is different. I loved there's a bit where they're on a panel and the guy, I can't remember his name, the black guy with the earring,
Ted.
Yeah, he gives the – he's my favorite character in this, by the way, whose name I don't remember. But he gives the audience exactly what they want to hear, and I was like, that's weird. And then he's like, you're so full of shit. And he's like, just a bigger shovel. Like, he just – he's selling the thing because he's got to get by.
I mean, it's definitely a behind-the-scenes curtain, for sure.
And that's why I love it.
I just don't know what he's saying, and I think –
And then there's the bit where –
This is going to sound weird, but I think the analogs might be hurting it, only because
– Possibly.
I spend a lot of time trying to figure out who everyone's supposed to be, and I don't think everyone has an analog.
Well, I think the main one that's important is the Kirby one isn't in here very much, but the big one here is the Stan Lee one, which I think is it's at the beginning. There's a Sid, maybe?
Bob. Sid is the Kirby one.
Okay, so the Bob one, I think you're learning a lot about how Stan Lee was perceived.
Sure.
And I liked that part. My favorite, there's actually a scene with Bob. And Bob, like, the Bob Stan character, like, we never get to see that the side of Stan Lee that they're talking about, but I've read about it. I know it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for a man to be able to survive in an industry like that long at that part, like, he has to have another side. All your favorite super successful people do, even if they make zombies. And there's a bit in the 60s where Ray comes in to try to get work at whatever the Marvel thing is here. And you're right. I think that stuff does get confusing because you end up wasting time on trying to get your analogs correct.
I think if you're going to analog, then everyone's got to be an analog. Otherwise,
then Ray comes in and he...
Verve Comics.
Yeah, and whoever Marvel. The boss guy is basically says, and forgive this language, it's not mine, but I'm saying it. He's like, this stuff looks a little faggy for us. And then he explains it, and then Bob just goes, fine, you're the boss, and he walks out. Now, there's a lot of things happening right there. And
well, you also see see the moment where Kirby is screwed here, where he says, hey, I'm making all these, where's my piece of the profits? And the Stan character's like, yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Yeah. But that's
not now, though. Once we figure out how much money we're making, we'll figure out how much you get, and then that's the moment where he's never going to get any money.
Yes.
And then the next very next page,
mm-hmm.
I mean, look, there's great stuff in here. The very next page is the Stan character's meeting with the, you know.
That's a real story, though. That happened to Gil Kane. Yeah. That's a Gil Kane story. And so I guess that might be his analog, is my point.
No, that's Sid. That's the Kirby character. And then he says,
"No,
what's great about it is the next page is the meeting where they're talking about all the merchandise that they're going to sell and how all the money they're going to make is from the merchandise.
The thing about the art being – basically they said Gil Kane's art was too gay.
Yes.
And he didn't bring him in there. So maybe that's who that Ray is supposed to be, the merchandising thing. And what I like too is that they didn't mention the movies because at that point that wasn't considered to be a thing.
It's possible that these all have analogs, but I don't – Yes. It's hard without knowing.
I'm sure lady is someone.
Who is Alfred Kessler, the guy in this who secretly marries a woman? Is that like –
Schuster.
Is that is it Schuster or is it Ditko?
I don't think it's Ditko because
he's a secretive. They don't even know he's married.
Well, the one thing I know about Schuster is that basically I think it's Schuster or not Siegel, but I could be wrong. One of them lived like they were a rock star and went and sort of like disavowed sort of this Jewish heritage and sort of lived like the biggest guy on earth and you know, but isn't that? I don't know. That's the way I look. But they're all archetypes, though. And I think that the underbelly of all of this stuff is the stuff that we don't see when we see the story of comics. We see, you know, they see the Stan Lee version of it, which is bullshit. Yeah. And I like that there's so much. I like how ambitious this is. It's a lot like Satellite Sam, but about comics. So it's much closer to home. And even that for us was like, oh, I get this. I know what's going on. But this is even more so. I the puzzle of it for me is actually the fun part.
Is the new person?
I don't know who that's supposed to
McFarlane?
Be. Something like that. I loved that scene. That was actually my other favorite scene in this. You know, that like on the panel, it's like, oh, you're the there's a bit where like they're on the panel and they're talking to the artists, and it's like, well, you know, we're optimistic about comics tradition, and the current artists are like, you know, we're so glad about what they brought, but everybody on the panel is like, fuck. They're all bitter about the whole thing, and that's the most real. Like, I don't care who that's supposed to be. That's the most real thing going on here. Is we pay comics pay so much lip service to Len Wein or whoever, and they don't follow through on it. Like, you're on your own, and when you're out, you're out. And and like the Ray guy, you know, like he's not like a little old man. He's a tough guy. In fact, he's one of the nicest characters in this. And he's telling the new guy to go fuck himself. And then Stan comes along and he does his like, hey, we just love comics, right? And man, there was so much here to like. But I think if you don't know what you're reading, I don't know that you're going to get it.
Yeah.
So it's for me, but you know, and I'm guessing that I am remedial at best compared to like other people who would read this. Like, if Mark Waid was going to read this, he'd be note everything that's happening. Or
I would think most pros would be the same.
I would hope. And older pros, not younger pros.
Let's talk about The Seeds, number two, and Nascenti, David Aja.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this? This is a miniseries. This, I think, is a five issue, something like that.
How's the weather out there, dude?
It looks great. I love this black and white, you know, grayscale. It's clearly David Aja, but it's light, slightly different. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit more texture, but I don't know what's going on here at all.
I think I pretty much understand what's going on. I don't even fully dislike the indirect method of storytelling. Let's call it that. Like, you sort of hear snippets of conversations with these different people, and like the dialogue is super strong. Like, it's very natural, almost too much so. You really aren't given a lot, I think. But I think I get what the world is. I think I get what they're getting at here.
At some point, society split between people who embrace technology, people who shun technology. That seems to be the thing, right? There's a wall.
Yes, literally.
And then there's aliens.
And they're here because it's the end of the world. Or they're not saying that specifically, but basically like what these guys do. And they're like labor trade union aliens who are like, they have a job to do, and they show up to worlds near when they're near the end. And this one alien sort of gets a shine on for a girl who's in a wheelchair here. And they have sort of a frank conversation. But everything in this is at a distance. It's removed, and you're sort of left to put it all together. It's pretty avant-garde. And so I like things about it, but I'm not going to tell you I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I do like scenes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like looking at it for sure.
I'm going to read it.
I'm definitely going to finish reading it,
right?
Which is the first time for one of these Berger books. But I'm not saying I'm getting a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Sure.
From a story standpoint. I'm fine with up to storytelling. I'm fine with having to work for it, but there's so much happening that you're just like, wait, I don't even, what? Aliens. So I'm hoping to get a better handle on it.
Yeah.
Or maybe I won't. And I just like looking at it. That may happen too.
Yeah. It's not like a, you know, a adventure superhero comic book. It's a very different kind of thing. All of these things are not to say that there's not a lot of skill going on. I think between the writer and the artist, there's a lot of skill going on, but it's not necessarily, rewarding in the same way that I think we're used to a lot of these being.
Yeah. And I'm a fan of Anna Senti. She wrote Daredevil in the time when I was reading Daredevil as a kid. She's very, very good.
I think that this is impressive in that it shows a completely different side of a person who most people would know as a, I think she's written a lot of things in there that weren't comics.
Well, that's good. I'm glad she's been doing something. You know, she's one of those people you just talked about who disappeared.
From comics anyway.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, we're done. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm glad she's doing other stuff. So let's talk a minute about Harry's, and while we may have trouble holding on to the Seed storyline, we have no trouble holding on to our Harry's razor blade handles because they're beautifully crafted, well designed, nice rubber handle. You don't drop it in the bathroom, which is a problem in some razors.
It's true.
And use that handle with the razor on the end of it to give yourself a close personal. It's a personal moment for me, Josh. It's a shave. It's quiet. I'm in the bathroom. No one's bothering me. Just me in the mirror looking at where did that gray hair come from?
Uh huh.
What's the wrinkles?
Get right rid of it.
But it's a personal thing. It's a nice moment. And so Harry's has become part of my personal grooming and my personal moment from every morning. And it's an every morning thing.
You know what's funny is that like I mentioned this on social media. I don't like watching people shave. Either like any kind of footage or whatever, like if you ever watch it on like a show or a documentary, they always go too fast and it creeps me out and I don't want to look at it.
They clearly don't have razors. Yeah.
I really like the sound of a razor blade as it goes over the skin and sort of cuts the little hairs. Yep. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's a very pleasing and satisfying sound as long as I don't cut myself.
Well, you know, you like to have your ritual.
Yes.
Know? You like to have that's why someone... People mention that with coffee, you know, the ritual of it. Well, the ritual of shaving is no different, and it's when you have nice quality tools, it makes the ritual even more satisfying, you know. And this is not, you can do this at Harry's for relatively cheap, and you don't have to buy yourself a giant, you know, espresso machine to have a nice ritual. And why can you do that? Well, Harry's stand behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. You can claim yours at harrys.com/ifanboy. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew great shaves comes down to great blades made of the sharp, durable steel that lasts, and that's why they bought a factory that's making some of the highest quality blades in the world for 95 years. And by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade, compared to $4 or even more than that in your store. Here's your quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days, and they'll give you a full refund. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. So here's the details of their offer. They're offering our listeners, you get your $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip, and a trimmer blade. We talked about this last week on the show. Very important, both those things. Rich lathering, shave gel, the travel blade cover, all of that, it's available at harrys.com/ifanboy. So make sure you go to harrys.com/ifanboy to redeem your offer and let them know we sent you to help support the show. So do yourself a favor. Luxuriate a bit.
Get the soap. Get the big body wash. $7 for that big bottle. It smells good. I've been using it. I like it. Get that.
It's big. It's like a, I mean, this is the theme of the show, but it's like a World War II, it's like a shell.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is actually. I see that.
Treat yourself.
Like an 88 millimeter shell.
Yeah. Treat yourself. All right. Let's talk about some Superman comics.
Let us.
Superman number 3 this week.
Every week there's a little period of time where I'm pretty sure I have pick of the week until I find out that I don't a day later.
Right.
And as I was reading, I think this was the first book that I read and I was like, wow, I think this could almost be pick of the week.
Yes.
And there were specifically a couple of moments in it that brought me to that, which is, I mean, this is what we wanted to happen, right? Like when we started, they were like, I'm not sure what this is, but it's different. And you know, it's Bendis. So we gave him a lot of room to sort of get there, and like I don't know, I was really enjoying it.
This was one of the ones that was in contention, and the only thing holding it back is, well, I'm going to actually get to it the next book because it's related. But the Ivan Reis art was terrific. I really like the little splash of personality he gives to Clark. It's a little bit different, but it still feels very authentic. I love that the whole Justice League was in this, and I actually remember when he first announced he was coming to DC, we were discussing what he could possibly be writing, and I really wanted him to write the Justice League book, and he would do great, I think, because he's been featuring them quite heavily in these books so far. And also, I loved the Adam Strange joke.
I was going to say, like, that page alone, like, that was when I was like, this could be pick of the week. That was a beautiful page. And so, I reread it several times.
The Earth has been transported into the Phantom Zone. Don't ask about how. And so while they're busy doing all that, fighting, you know, the repercussions of transporting an entire planet into a Phantom Zone, Adam Strange is just alone with a satellite floating where Earth was. Guys, I came all the way from Ran.
It's not funny. So there was that, which was a great sort of non sequitur moment, which was love. Like, gave him a whole page. Like, you don't get to do that if you're not Brian Bendis. There's a bit where Superman pops into Star Labs in the beginning, and you hear him sort of talking to himself, thinking to himself, like, these are good people, it's not what it is, but he just has to get to the point. He doesn't have time. So he just sort of barks orders, not on Captain America like, really. But even he had to justify that to himself because he's going to come off as rude because he's Kansas, which I really loved. Then there's another bit later where, like, everybody in Metropolis is going nuts and looting, and he just flies down and he's like, cut it out now. And they do. Yeah. And it was such a dad thing. Like, he's Superman's everybody's dad. That's what he is now. He's not the big blue Boy Scout. He's like the greatest dad.
Yeah.
And
no, this was probably the runner up book.
Yep.
And I had something. Oh, I just like that this feels very in the DC universe. You've got the Atom. They convene the scientists. So you've got Ray Palmer and Ryan Choi and Ted Kord and Mr. Terrific and Will Magnus. So I just like that Bendis is really getting a chance to really spread his DC wings through these books. But it never doesn't feel like a Superman book. It still feels very much a Superman book, even if he's getting all these cameos in. I think Bendis so far has been, even if it's not a smashing sales success, I think it's been a smashing creative success so far.
Yeah, now, yeah, it definitely has. I hope people are responding to it because it's kind of the Superman I've been wanting to read for a while.
The reason why it wasn't the pick, and let's talk about Supergirl 22, which is related to this, written by Mark Andreyko, drawn by Kevin Maguire. He's done the last two issues. I don't know how many he's going to end up doing. So she's on the hunt for the guy who's got the big dumb name who killed Krypton. So that's what this story is. Well, while Superman is actually fighting him in the Phantom Zone, she is hunting for evidence that he actually did it. So she goes to the Green Lantern archives on MOGO to try to find some proof that this guy actually did blow up Krypton and he was just boasting. And the problem is, through flashbacks, they basically show that he did do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hate that a lot. I've decided that. I was thinking about it all reading this issue. Like, the tragedy of Krypton was the hubris of the people on Krypton.
Yes. Which
was that they ignored the dangers, they ignored the warning signs. When you turn it into a specific act by a terrorist or a murderer or whatever the reasoning, we don't know the reasoning yet, then it takes away from the power. It's very similar to the problem we have where they're making everyone like a lineage character, where it's like, you are Green Arrow because you were always fated. So it takes away from the choice that Oliver Queen makes to become a hero.
Right.
To put away the Playboy lifestyle and become a hero. That's a powerful choice. When it's your dad was a Green Arrow and your grandfather was a Green Arrow, then it's less interesting. This is the same thing. When it's the pride and the hubris of the people of Krypton, and especially the ruling council, causes their death, that is more tragic to me than someone coming along and blowing it up on purpose.
Especially the metaphor that represents in our world today, even more than when it was created.
Which just seems like an odd choice then to go this way now.
I agree.
That nagging thing in the back of my mind. Supergirl, super fun. Obviously, Kevin Maguire, one of my all-time favorites. The book looks terrific. It's fun to see him get to draw a bunch of Green Lanterns. And Superman was terrific, but like that little piece is keeping me from really loving it because I just don't like that they're messing with it. And it's not about messing with the origin.
It's that it's a weaker choice.
It's just about it's a worse choice, and it seems an obviously worse choice. And I just don't like it.
I agree.
Don't like it.
Hmm.
You know what? I liked Catwoman number 3.
Yeah, you know what? I completely missed it because I still don't think that I would read a Catwoman book, so I think I just didn't see it.
This issue is all about the origin of the creepy woman, the villain.
Oh, I like that villain.
Yeah, so we find out her fucked up family origin and how she got to be in a position of power. And this is, to me, dealing with, and we're going to talk about Detective Comics next, dealing with the grief of the wedding better than the Batman book is at the moment. In that it's clearly a motivator, but it's not being harped on the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
She's off doing reckless and dangerous things because she's hurting, while not constantly talking about why she's hurting. We just have to know why she's hurting. And the Joelle Jones art continues to be amazing. But I think this was the best issue so far.
Tell you something, those insert pages in there by Fernando Blanco, they're not bad either.
No, they're not. And so he does the flashback to the villain's childhood. And there's a couple of great panels where her, as she goes into her memory, the Joelle Jones art becomes the Blanco art, which was cool. The only problem I had with this book is that at one point Selena gets knocked out of a fourth floor window and she lands on a car. She's totally fine. But she doesn't have superpowers. She would be very badly hurt.
She's a cat. That's well, how
that's
that works.
One of the lives down then.
It's a comic book.
But other than that, I think I'm pleasantly surprised by this book. I mean, I knew the art would be terrific. I didn't have any experience with Joelle Jones's writing. As we've said before, we were worried about how much of a shroud the breakup would cause over these characters. But so far, this book is, to use a Ron phrase, delightful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Detective Comics 922 features the new guest writer, James Robinson, who's going to write it for a couple of issues before Peter J. Tomasi takes over. And this was like the opposite. Like it was really dwelling in the post-marriage stuff.
It was. I feel like I always have to make an adjustment to James Robinson books when they start because he is not of this time. Like his books just, nobody talks like they do in any other books. And at first I was like, this is so weird. And then by the end, I'm usually back on board. So when I think about it in that context and I assign it to James Robinson, I go, this is what you get when you get James Robinson, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it does require a mental shift for me. And then I also like the idea that he's like, I just need to solve a regular murder.
You know what, though? I was really hoping it was just going to be a regular murder.
Right. Yeah.
Like I was really excited. I was like, oh, that's fun, because there have been a couple of instances in the past where Batman just gets involved in a regular murder. There's no supervillain. There's no conspiracy. There's nothing. There's no big plot to destroy Gotham. It's just a murder. And I thought that's what we were looking at here. But and then, of course, turns out Firefly is here, and then plus Cobra, and which is fine. I just was I was really excited at first. Like, oh, that'd be awesome. Just one dude murdering another dude, and Batman solves it just for peace of mind. But
that's true.
It's comics. I get it. It's not going to work that way.
But there was a lot of it. I actually really dug the art by Steven Segovia. I thought it was, it was just an issue of Detective. Again, once I got over the way that they talk a little, which wasn't quite what I'm used to with Batman, but it's fine. And I don't know, I really did dig the art. I was like, oh, this is just a nice sort of Batman story. And I know that there was the weight of the wedding thing in the background, but it was still just like, he could have been brooding about anything.
True. I mean, I think you're right, because I think I was a little off balance with it because of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point Commissioner Gordon says geez to Batman, and I was like, really?
There was a couple of those, and the way that Alfred talked to him and they went to each other. Like, it was just, it wasn't wrong. It just was different. And I was like, all right, just adjust. You like the way this person writes. Yep. Have to calibrate for him. That's all. Happens every time.
Let's jump into War Corner, which we haven't done in a while, which we kind of already been dipping in and out of this whole episode. War Corner is where we talk about World of Tanks Citadel number 5, the final issue of the latest World of Tanks miniseries that Garth Ennis gets paid to write. How did you feel about this whole story? There's another tank. Obviously, World of Tanks is all about tank battling. It's a video game, very, 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 very popular video games. So this is all time of tank battles.
That Garth Ennis has never looked at or thought about in any way. I mean, that should be clear. Like, that might be on the cover. Fine, whatever. Whatever gets him the job, I'm totally
although
fine
my
with that.
My he's got to be 60 something. Although it's LA, could be in his 70s. Doctor plays it.
Okay.
He was like, oh, do you play World of Tanks? And I was like, you too. I don't play it, but I just know from my
so video. You've got a couple of German tank soldiers who get separated from their unit, end up with another one. They get dropped into basically the Eastern Front the Russians approach Berlin. Famously, very, very savage fighting. The new Panzer tanks are out. They're crap. And the T-34s are going all over them. If you don't know what I'm saying, don't read this book. You won't like it. But if you do know what I'm saying, this is a lot like the Hey Kids. My review is basically the same as the Hey Kids comics. They're not going to give you a lot. If you like hanging out with Garth Ennis war characters, soldier characters, then you'll be fine. But there's no Americans. It's Germans versus Soviets.
I lost a thread a bit on this one, only because the Germans are wearing gray and the Soviets are wearing gray.
I did have that issue.
And they both speak in British.
Cockney, basically.
Well, they both speak with British
working
voices,
class accents.
Which is
Yep.
Fine, but when you have when the dialogue is pretty much the same and they're wearing the same colors, I was like, wait, which ones are these again? And I had that had happening, and that made it tough. I didn't really love this one. I enjoyed reading it, but I didn't really love this one.
There's a couple of things. Like, we've seen these before. I really like P.J. Holden's art. I thought it's the best that he's had, that Garth Ennis has had in one of these war stories in a while. The end sequence where basically you've got the tanks are all coming together. The Germans have shitty, awful tanks, and they don't have enough people to run them. And the Soviets are just... they're just coming for them because that's what they're going to do. You've got the one tank on the high ground. It's a great battle sequence, basically. You get the one tank on the high ground. He has one shot. It goes through. And then the Germans drive their tank off the cliff at the other tank, killing the one guy. You know,
ram it, basically.
And the German just lets the girl go. He's like, I couldn't see the point of killing her. And she was willing to die. So all of that. And then at the end, Ron loves a map. I don't know if you guys know this, but what I love is a historical explainer along with a war map telling me where we are with the big red arrow that says this is what way the battle was going, and then the context for everything that happened just before and after that.
The little four-paragraph explainer was my favorite part of the issue.
It totally was. So, like, at the end of it, I was like, I loved it. And that was it. That's five issues. Done.
Hopefully they do more. Yeah. This is the second one I think they've done.
Yes, I think so.
But, I mean, if Garth Ennis can get paid to write war comics from a video game license, that's fine.
Whatever.
Totally fine. Totally fine. Now let's talk about the patron pick over at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every week, all the patrons get to vote. Any patron at any level gets to vote to put a book into the rundown. Voting opens Wednesday morning. Voting closes Thursday afternoon. And they picked this week Cemetery Beach, number one, from Image Comics. Warren Ellis, Jason Howard, Fanographics. The patrons love an Image number one.
That's do love an Image number one.
They love it.
A Warren Ellis Image number one is nothing to sneeze at.
No, I'm just saying that's, you know, they'd love that. That's all. I'm just making an observation.
It's true.
They work together on Trees.
Last Image series. I had completely forgotten about.
I fell off that book.
I finished it, point. I think.
What I liked most about this was that it didn't really feel like a Warren Ellis comic. And if you handed this to me without the first two pages, they said, who wrote this? I don't think I would have been able to say Warren Ellis.
Which is pretty interesting and unusual.
Yeah, I liked that. The downside is this has Image number one syndrome in that it really needed another issue because I really don't, I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. I don't really know what's going on really, which is again, fine. We just talked about that, but like it really, I feel like it needed a little bit more to tell me a little bit more about whether or not I care, but that's fine. It's a cold open. I'll read the next one.
Spoiler. It's funny. I had seen Jason Howard, I guess, kind of do this style. Like we all sort of first knew him from Astounding Wolfman, which is sort of a animated style, smooth sort of cartoony lines. Came in to do Trees and just sort of leveled up completely. And this is more in that vein. So I kind of like
the art a lot.
Yeah, I did too. And you know, we're sort of thrown into a situation where there's a lot of this kind of stuff happening lately. Like it's our world, but not quite. There's even
that other Kirkman book, which is similar. Yeah. So this is like
Space Colonies.
Yes. So they've in the 1920s, we figured out how to travel and colonize different planets, and so this is, I guess, an operative from Earth is on one of these planets, and they're freaking out because old home is coming for us, and then there's a lot of fighting.
But basically, like you have an explainer that happens in an interrogation room, for the first four or five pages, and then it's kind of an action sequence for the rest of it.
That sequence where the guy, the prisoner, jumps off the chair, flips around, strangles the guy with his handcuffs was terrific.
Yes, it was.
Great. We were terrifically drawn. And then
the coloring was even great.
Yeah, the coloring and the whole escape sequence is silent. It's really great. Really, really great. But I just don't know what I'm looking at. That's all. I just don't know.
I feel like what's really interesting here is that like I think Jason Howard has the ability to make a Warren Ellis book not feel like a Warren Ellis book. And not in a bad way. Because Trees was, like, I don't know, but there's layouts here that I'm just not used to seeing in a Warren Ellis book, but he's just letting him roll. And I think Yeah.
The two-page spread with him and the girl are escaping.
Yep.
It's also gorgeous. This is a good-looking book.
It's a really good-looking book. There's a lot of draft skills. It's one of those things where you look back to Astounding Wolfman, and you're like, well, why did Kirkman pick this guy? And you're like, oh, because he had it. And Kirkman could see that, you know, that he had that skill to be able to do that. You know, overall, I don't think the story was super original or interesting. And it actually, because it didn't have that Warren Ellis feeling, that was the thing that was interesting about it. So then it was kind of bland in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's got his love of, you know, fictionalizing history and technology. Like, oh, that runs through a lot of his books.
With sort of scientific grounding.
Yeah, so like he did that with Planetary. He did it with that book about England having a space force. And he likes to do that. It's great. I love to read that.
Yes,
it's just I don't know what the story here is yet, which is fine. I'm willing to find out because I really liked the first issue a lot. So let's do ratings.
Ratings.
Out of 5. I'm going to give it a 4.
4.
And I'm sticking with it, as I said earlier.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, you are. For sure.
Okay.
All right. So that's the patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go vote.
Let's do that then. Fine. You would go to patreon.com/ifanboy to be able to do that. If you're not a member already, if you're not a patron, member's the wrong word. That's the old word. We have added to the next stretch goal, in addition to the monthly non-comics media podcast, we're going to be working on uploading all the missing full-length video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website. The reason that that's happening is that those were hosted by Revision 3, which was then bought by Discovery, which was then shuttered. And there's a significant amount of labor involved in doing that. So,
yeah.
It's not a matter of flipping a switch or anything like that. We are less than $400 away from being able to get.
So yeah, so if you want to see probably 2/3 of the video content we did was now missing from the internet. So if you want to see that stuff back on the internet, it's our next stretch goal, less than $400 away.
And we didn't get rid of the non-comics media podcast. It's still there. It's still part of it.
Yeah. It's a 2-for-1. It's 2-for-1.
Totally. Get the over to patreon.com/ifanboy for that, plus you know the power thing we got coming up. It's coming up. It's fun. Then you can also, if you want t-shirts or merch, branded merch, you can go to ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 7 designs up now. We talked about them many times. There's Herm, which doesn't have anything to do with any other properties. I don't know why you'd think that. There's our rating shirt, and of course the champion, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. And
I don't know why I don't have that shirt.
I don't either.
It seems silly that we don't have our own shirts, but we're not making them. So I don't know why I don't have that one. In fact, I really wanted to get it for last week's show and wear it, but I didn't.
I have a lot of shirts is one of my reasons.
Yeah, that's possible also.
Yeah. And then, of course, if you don't want to deal with any of that, you just say, you know what, let me help you guys out a little bit here. You can go to ifanboy.com/support where we still have a link for PayPal donations and things like that. And of course, there's ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find links to buy our Books Below Books. You will always find the link to buy the Pick of the Week book or any book that we talk about on the website. And that's a general link to Amazon as well that you can get to help support the show somewhat indirectly. And so with that said, every week the patrons, 4 of them, are bestowed with a power by us.
Yep.
And sometimes you start talking and you realize you've got the first one and you have nothing to say. But what I know is that Mario Miranda always knows his exact elevation.
Oh, so he just sort of feels.
Yeah. Oh, weird.
He just feels
1,692 feet. He doesn't have to walk around trying to find a place in his GPS app. Or playing with the little console in his car, trying to figure out what he's at, until finally he figures out that the way you do that is to ask Siri, because Siri can tell you what elevation you're at, unless there's no signal, in which case you're SOL. Well, Mario doesn't have that problem. Mario can tell you right now you're 200 feet above sea level.
Interesting. So it's like it's just a feeling he has.
Just he knows it. He's got an inner barometer, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what a barometer is or how it works. It has something to do with humidity, I think. I don't think it has anything to do with elevation, but there we are.
Well, Mark C. Warner, and I don't know if this is related to what you just said or what's going on in the country right now. Also, thoughts to people in the South right now with the storm. Mark C. Warner is a human umbrella.
Go on.
And what I mean by that is he creates sort of a telekinetic overhang that can block this, block the rain. He creates it with his mind. The rain's still happening. It just goes around him. And we've, I know we've had the power before. The rain doesn't hit people. This is like he's literally creating a telekinetic umbrella. He can make it as big enough for two people, but that's as big as it goes.
Okay.
Telekinetic umbrella power.
Hmm.
Which really annoys those guys in New York who appear out of nowhere when it starts raining.
Where are they the rest of the time?
They're like, umbrellas. And he's like, don't need it. And just, there it is. Telekinetic umbrella.
Standing there completely. Is there a visual component?
Yeah, it looks a little bit like a dotted outline, like a 60s Invisible Woman.
I like that. That's all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Joe Perna, if you are any kind of an asshole or you're inconsiderate or you're just being out of line around Joe Perna, boils.
Does he do it on purpose or just happens?
No, it happens. It's a passive skill.
It's uncontrollable.
Yeah. So if you are within like a 10-foot ratio of it, like say you're in a restaurant, Joe is over there. He's having his lamb or whatever it is, a table away, somebody starts getting shirty with the waitress, you know, completely out of line, you know, like, where's like, my thing? What's this?
Unreasonably.
Yeah. Boils.
Boils. All over the whole body or just?
Yeah.
Or do the are the boils dependent on the level of asshole? Like, it's a little bit asshole, so you get like a couple of boils.
No.
Or if it's like full on asshole, your whole body is covered in boils.
You know what? There's no more.
It's just it's a black or white thing.
Yep. Keep your shit. You know, it's not forever. It's not permanent. You're not going to have that forever, but you're going to have to deal with that outbreak until it subsides.
Well, that sucks.
Well, it's time for everyone to be a little nicer to each other, and Joe's doing his part to make sure that happens.
Greg Marcus, his shoes are always in mint condition.
Ooh. No matter what he does,
his shoes never get dirty. They never rip. They never get scuffed. They're always in mint condition.
Did you get some new shoes recently?
I did, but they are fine. I'm just thinking down the road.
I don't want my shoes to be too clean.
I think you're probably talking about boots.
Maybe.
Because boots you want to break in, but you know.
Well, I don't like my sneakers like to be blinding white. I don't like them to be dirty, but I don't want your first instinct to go, those are brand new. I want just past that.
Well, Greg's got no choice in the matter. His shoes are always super nice. They're mint.
Well, somebody out
but
there.
But they still break in, like his feet,
yeah.
You know, around his feet. But the outer part, they always stay.
Well, he's never going to do that horrible thing that many, many men do, is just to wear crap shoes. And just let him be crappy and just not care.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and get your dumb superpower at a $5 or higher level. We think everyone who is given, and we still have many, many more to give out. I think we just plotted it out. We've got another many, many more episodes to go. We're going to skip all the emails because we're long, but we thank you for writing in at contact@ifanboy.com. We'll get back to your emails next week. We won't go quite so long because there will hopefully be fewer books that come out. Let's talk about tonight's patron hangout. So if you're listening to this show right off the bat, and you're a patron, September 16th, that's our next patron hangout, and that's where we're doing the G.I. Joe fantasy draft. Me and Josh and Ron are getting together to draft our ideal G.I. Joe squad. So if you're an early listener, it's happening tonight. If you listen to it Monday, you missed it last night. But if you're a patron, you can go back, and it's archived on the patron page, all the old hangouts. So you can watch them there, and I'm very excited for this one. So I'm looking forward to it. I've been looking forward to it for months.
Sure, yeah. Also, I was looking forward to talking to Jeff Parker for a while, and I did, and I recorded it, and you can listen to that. That was last month's Talksplode episode. This week, Booksplode, Superman Blue Volume 1 coming in. I had a good early lead on it, and now, well, I got to finish it. It's one way or the other, but we'll be talking about that book. Here's your spoiler. Well, no, I'm not even going to spoil it. I wanted to tell you a thing. I'm not going to. You're going to have to wait to listen to it, but that'll be coming
out. Don't spoil it. I'm about a third of the way through it.
I'm more than that.
Moving quicker than I was in the beginning.
Yes. Yeah.
So check that out this week. Later on this week, that show will be coming
out. I have
out.
A lot of suggestions for the next one we can do.
We'll talk about it after the show. Head over to ifanboy.com. That's where you'll find all of our podcasts, as well as some of our old video shows are up there, but not all of them, as we discussed earlier. You can find out what the pick is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following ifanboy on Twitter. Or you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram.
And if you like this show, you can write a review or leave a star rating on iTunes, things like that. Better yet, tell people about it. Mention it in your social media. You know, if, say you're down at the local sandwich establishment. And then the one guy's like,
Sandwich Emporium.
I used to really be into those Batman comics. What's the guy? Norm something? That's Norm Breyfogle. Hey, you know what? You might like to get back into it, Vincenzo. And he'd be like, no, what? And then you'd be like, I listen to this podcast. And then Vincenzo's pretty happy about it, so he gives you a special card that gets you a 10% discount on your sandwiches from that point going forward because he enjoyed the show so much.
You know, the last week's show where we talked about Italians being something we disliked, maybe this is why.
So you're saying that I have suggested that the only valuable thing that they can do is make a sandwich?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just trying to figure out how that happened.
I don't remember. I have no recollection of that. I don't think Italians are supposed to be on the list.
We've been slurred.
I feel like somebody out there, like he put that in there. Like he's like, watch, they'll read anything. The Italians.
Which is true.
Yes, it's true.
Like you'll notice, Josh, I took Mom's off the script as you requested.
I didn't notice. I just didn't read it, but there it goes. I went without it anyway. We were in simpatico there. I think it's true that there is – what's interesting is that there is an ethnic group on the list of things that we don't like. And neither of us denied it as a possibility. We didn't say, whoa, that's not true. What we said was, I don't remember saying that. Which is very different than an unequivocal denial.
That's true. I can't deny that.
Yep.
It was late. By the time we got to that point of the show, I was drunk. You were tired. Let's close this one out because we're over time and we'll be back next week with two shows, the Pick of the Week and the Booksplode. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I was also a little drunk. And then that gave way to really tired. That's what happened. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.